Any given Monday.
The weekend's over, the final sirens have sounded. We've got our winners and losers, our champs and our chumps.
Any given Monday.
So now it's time to look back and evaluate all the games, dramas and controversies from the best sport in the world.
Any given Monday.
So forget about those back-to-work blues and settle in for this week's edition of
Any Given Monday.
Please join your hosts, author and historian Dr. Dan Eddy, and local football expert Owen Carter, as they're joined by special weekly guests for your most comprehensive wrap of the weekend's action. Let's get to it.
Any Given Monday.
Well, hello. Welcome back, Any Given Monday podcast. It's been a while since you've heard from my lovely self. Obviously, you've missed my voice, but also my co-partner from, it's been probably 12 months or so now, hasn't it? But Owen Carter, good to see you, mate, or hear from you.
Both of those things. Great to see your smiling face, Dr. Dan. It has been a little while, although we do actually chat week on week. We're doing that footy tipping comp throughout the year.
It didn't go well, so we sort of brushed over that.
Well, I had a feeling I may have been able to peg it back. I was a bit far behind to start there, but came back with a blaze of glory, so I wasn't too upset by that. But no, it was all in good fun, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, good fun until I started losing and then I gave up. But, hey, we've got a couple of special guests today to join us, though, because we needed a couple of people who actually know what they're talking about. I mean, we've got the looks and then we bring in these blokes and they smarten it up a bit. So, firstly, one of the best callers in Victoria or probably Australia, Ian Doherty, the Whiz. How are you, mate?
Well, I think you've got that wrong on both counts. The good-looking and people who know what they're talking about. But that's a lovely way to be introduced to this podcast. Thanks very much, Dan. Nice to see you again.
And how you been, too, mate?
Yeah, very well. Just spending lockdown getting a bit fatter. And
join the club.
Yeah, the supermarket certainly won't go out of business while I'm around, that's for sure. Or probably first choice as well. But or Liquorland or Dan Murphy's or anyway. I've been having a good time and settled in the region, Latrobe Valley, and enjoying life out here. It's a terrific place to live.
Yeah, anywhere outside the city at the moment is a good place to live, isn't it? So I'm down Langath away. I know Owen's a bit stuck just on the border. He's inside the city limits, so he hasn't quite got the freedoms that we've got. And I know our other special guest as well has got a bit more free. Oh, he's been in lockdown the last week, hasn't he? But Brad Sinclair, it's been a while, mate. Welcome to Any Given Monday podcast.
Thanks, Dan. It's good to speak to you, Owen and the Whiz. It's very warm here in Ballarat because I've got the ducted heating on about 40.
Yes, that's just the most remarkable move I've ever heard of, going moving from Cairns to Ballarat. That's extreme temperature change, I would have thought.
Got to say, I don't regret one bit of it. Ballarat I'd visited as a kid in primary school to Sovereign Hill, like I think we all did, and so I couldn't remember it. Living here now, it is the most beautiful city that I've ever lived in. I must admit that, and I've been lucky to live in some great spots. Apart from the weather, once you get used to the weather, you just don't go out. You're not allowed to anyway. So, but it is a beautiful town. I love it. And the football, I know we're going to talk a lot of footy. The footy is as good as you'll get anywhere.
And I know I was speaking with you the other day, Brad, and there's that beautiful footy ground. I know Mars Stadium's sort of the centrepiece with the AFL, but there's that beautiful footy ground. You come into town from the Melbourne end and you go under that really old bridge and there's that old footy ground there, or cricket oval, a bit of both. It's absolutely stunning. Just tell us about that.
That's the Eastern Oval. The grandstand there is heritage listed, as there is also another one at City Oval where Redan play, but the Eastern Oval is the home of East Point, that are won the last two premierships and were looking pretty good. It would have been a real tight tussle. They could have won their third this year. They recruited just before June 30, big Darren Jolly. They lacked a ruckman. They went and got Darren Jolly and he was dominating. But that ground, you're right, Dan, it reminds me of the 70s when my dad used to take me to VFA games and I'd go to Sandringham or Oakley or these sort of grounds. going into these grounds up here, and in particular that Eastern Oval, if you find a better ground in Australia, let me know. I'll go and visit it because that Eastern Oval's amazing.
Yep, for sure. Well, boys, it's grand final week. Finally, I'll get your thoughts, Ian. If you could just, what are your thoughts on having to wait the extra week this week? have you think it's a positive or is it hopefully a one-off?
Yeah, not happy Jan's probably the answer. and I think from now on, I need to start referring to it as grand final fortnight, just to see if we can get our heads around it. I don't understand the reasons why. I see the benefits. You know, for some of these boys that may have, you know, someone for argument's sake got an injury, gives them some time to recover. Steve May's a good example with the Demons, and it'll get him in much better shape going into the grand final. But I thought the game was for the fans. And from a marketing perspective, as the season builds, it gets bigger and works up into this crescendo of preliminary final weekend, and we're all so excited, we can't wait for the grand final. Okay, everybody stop and wait for a week. It makes absolutely no sense. And for mine, I certainly hope that we don't see it again next year.
The only thing I think, if I was one of the fans of either team and my player got concussion in the preliminary final, that's probably the only positive I'd see to it, is that he'd be fine for 2 weeks. But other than that, if we're trying to copy the Super Bowl, which I hope we're not, it doesn't work for footy, I don't think, because you're right, the momentum thing's huge.
Gee, I'm going to be.
I feel like it's developed organically. I mean, they came up with it a few years ago to stop the coaches from, you know,
resting blokes. Yeah.
Yeah, and ruining that, and then they've just moved it. And I thought, if they're so desperate to get the season away, as they keep saying, around COVID, then why stop? Just do it. You know.
I'm going to be completely different here. I agree with it, and I'll tell you why. One reason, because of COVID. What it's done, because of the travel that Melbourne and Bulldogs have had to do, in particular the Bulldogs, and they've had to quarantine for 7 days. If you had played this last week, that means the Bulldogs would have been out of quarantine for 8 hours before playing the game. Yeah. So I don't think you'll see it again. I think it's only because of what's happened.
Yeah, and look, you make a good point, because what they're trying to do is create a really even playing field. This is all part of the overall plan to make an even competition of it. So you can see why they're doing it. But again, it's about the fans. We get all excited. We build up to this crescendo, and then we've got to sit and twiddle our thumbs last weekend. I was cranky on that.
I watched every game on live stream that was around Australia. I watched the...
Yeah, there's a lot of people watching
that. I watched every game. Broadbeach and
grand final, and
I watched Cairns Lions coached by Aaron Davey win their first premiership in 38 years, 13,002 days. So I watched that one. I know, isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
We've had to wait for 2 weeks, but we also then have to wait a few extra hours on the Saturday. What are your thoughts on night grand final?
Yeah, look. Thinking back on last year, and I think the popular opinion was it wasn't the best. The element of waiting 2 weeks, so you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs this year. There was a bit of that last year, in the sense that you're used to having that pre-game barbecue and you got a few drinks under your belt because it's 12 o'clock somewhere, and you're ready to go by the time it's two-ish on the first bounce, but you get there and you go, well, where is it? Now I've got to wait a few more hours until it happens. So Wiz might be ducking down to first choice again and topping up because he started too early. But
well, Wiz wouldn't have seen the second quarter.
Yeah, this is just between us. But it was Cox Plate Day last year, and I did spend the afternoon on the punt and had a couple of wins, actually. It was a pretty good day. So with a win comes a little celebration in a small glass bottle. And so there was quite a few wins. So by the time my beloved Cats ran out into the ground for the grand final last season, I was feeling pretty relaxed, I must say.
As someone who, and we obviously say gamble and drink responsibly for anyone other than the Wiz.
Don't be like the Wiz.
um, f- for me, the grand final last year, my boy's probably too young to appreciate it yet, but we talked it up all day, and he actually fell asleep at 7:30 just before the first bounce, you know, which was probably good for me because I could watch it more closely. But I thought, gee, there must be a lot of kids like this. And then it finished, and it's like, I want to get pumped up and really celebrate that I've just seen a grand final, and I want it, but it's bedtime. And, you know, like, seriously, unless you're 18 and you want to hit the nightclubs, it you don't hang around for, so I'm thinking if it's back in Melbourne next year and they stick to a night one, all those pubs and all those, think around Richmond and the city and that have their meal time, you know, you're going to miss, no one's going to be buying a meal at a pub in Melbourne for, you know, because they're going to be glued to the game. So they're going to miss all that trade. And then the next day, it's even worse for me being a big lover of reading and that, because you wake up and there's no Sunday paper with any footy in it because it's too late shattering. That's my most favourite paper of the year, the Sunday after the grand final. And it's nothing. It's just all the rugby league stuff. And that's it.
If you ask Russell Bennett down at the Age, he might burn the midnight oil for you, mate, and get something.
But it changes all that as well. Well, let's not be too naive about this. Again, we think the footy's for the fans, but it's for them. It is a commercial enterprise. People in the AFL refer to themselves as an industry all the time, which really annoys me. It's not. It's a football competition. But you can't argue with a couple of $1 billion in TV rights. So what it means is, do you keep the people that are paying the couple of $1 billion happy, or us footy fans? So unfortunately, we come second. You know, the romantic notion of when we grew up as kids, I mean, you know, we're all similar age. Thank you. The football, and late September, the sun shining, the shiny red football, the late afternoon light and the sun hitting the Premiership Cup as they hold it up. They're the romantic things about Grand Final Day that have been taken away just so we can put on a show at halftime. And little boys like your little boy, Dan, they miss it. And I think that's terribly sad.
And particularly, you, all three of you guys know, growing up, you're hanging to see the medal bit at the end, and you want to see they can't see that, because even if you're 10 or 15, you're probably passed out by 11 o'clock, you know, like so you don't get to see the real culmination of the whole thing, your hero's getting his medal, you know, so that bit,
No, you're spot on, and I'm led to believe that the way things will work out, unless there's a major hold up, that, you know, it looks like the final siren will probably go at about 10 past 11 Victorian time, which means we probably won't see them do their lap of honour with the cup until nearly 11 o'clock.
I'm in bed. I'm asleep.
11 o'clock. Even for a super fit athlete like myself, you know, that's probably too late.
44 cans deep.
You've got young kids yourself. Sorry, Brad, but you've got young kids yourself. They won't be able to see it, will they, till the end?
No, they won't. But in all honesty, they probably won't care either. I've got two girls. So. they've only just recently expressed interest in kicking a footy. So anyone that follows me on personal social media will have seen that. But look, I've tried to encourage the day. We're going to do some footy food, pies, sausage rolls, hot dogs, that sort of thing. But you know what? Come bedtime, they're probably not going to have the interest either. But for those like your young fella who will want to stay up and do that, it is. But look, having said all of that, if the AFL had the best opportunity to trial this, now is the time. They've been super reluctant to do it in Melbourne. And now that they've been forced to take it out of Melbourne, they're going, well, you know what? Let's do it at night. Let's do it at twilight, and we'll see if it works or not. And if it doesn't, we'll just go straight back to what we normally do, and it'll be the if it ain't broke, don't fix it policy.
I hear what you're saying, but my fear is that the TV network will come back and say, look at all these extra million viewers we got. You're never doing it on Saturday afternoon again. And let's take a look at the whole season. How many Saturday afternoon games were there?
Nah, it's become the dead time. During the season anyway, because you are generally playing your own sport. And
I go a step further too. I really believe that they brought in a couple of these changes in the rules to get higher scores to get more ads in. I really believe that. I think Channel 7 run it.
So
if you're paying $200-300 billion or whatever, or million dollars.
A couple of billion. I think I agree with you, Brad. So much so, have you ever been to the MCG during a game and they stop to do the video review, right? So when you're at the ground, all you see is the Specsavers logo on the big screen. And I feel like the cynic in me, perhaps with the commercial background, says, I wonder in the contract is they've got to do one of those a quarter, just get their logo up there. And I really hope not, because you'd be at the ground and everybody saw that he touched that before it went through, but we stopped for a minute to look at the Specsavers logo anyway.
I actually hate it. Can I just take a break? I've got to take some Hershey's chocolate. Have you ever tried Hershey's chocolate? Now, Hershey's chocolate is a mouthful, and you will go back for more. I'm ready to go again. Sorry.
Please sponsor us, Hershey's.
Yeah, exactly.
And, hello, first choice if you're listening.
Maybe we're all standing like Buddy Duzzies with our what we do and don't like, I guess, and the dollar has become the driving force. But my son, you talk about ads that get forced into our face. My son's still four; he's five in a couple of days, and he started to memorize those Shaquille O'Neal betting ads. He actually, because they're literally on three times a minute. He actually he obviously doesn't know what betting is, but it's the stuff's in his head already. Yeah, you know, he's four. You know, it's just like, wow.
I actually think that's incredibly dangerous, and I'm not one of these woke parents that locks kids up. And my kids are young women now, but just go to the Brownlow for a second. I felt like that entire event was hijacked by betting agencies.
Yeah. Yep. And it worked.
Sometimes a commercial break, they come back on and there's reviewed odds and,
it worked.
Special multis. And
I got on sports betting back Petrarca at $13 because they kept putting it up there. So it works, doesn't it? It got me. Yeah, right. And he come 10th, so I done me dough.
Yeah. I think that's a huge issue. It's paying for the game.
Yeah.
But it didn't have to pay for the game for 150 years. So why does it have to now?
Yeah, and they've been pushing for years, you know, all the publicities around clubs need to get out of their gaming facilities and that. Well, hang on, you guys are actually forcing this down our throats. So where's the...
Maybe there's something in the contract there that we don't know about either.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Hopefully you sat up and watched some or all of the Brownlow last night. We're obviously recording this on the Monday, but what did you think of the Brownlow count and the... Oh, it's the midfielders' medal now, as we know, but some major votes going towards some of the main midfielders in the comp.
Yeah, my viewing of the count was quite interesting. I was trying to set up a bit of an online watch party with a friend of mine, and he's currently renting in a house that doesn't have an aerial. So he's trying to get it on 7 Plus or trying to find it wherever he can find it. He goes, oh, can't do it. So for anyone at Google Meet, I definitely did not live stream the count to his bedroom.
Where's he living? Ho Chi Minh.
Ho Chi Minh?
Well, you haven't got an aerial on your house. I haven't seen a house without an aerial in about 40 years.
Oh, I do, but no, he was lucked it out. So, yeah, I did a bit of a favour for him. But, look, I thought it was pretty exciting, to be honest. A lot of high vote getters, and there was a bit of tension towards the end there, and will they, won't they, and all that sort of stuff. It was a bit disappointing from a St Kilda supporter's perspective that Jack Steele didn't get as much as he could have. But as I think I said to all of you guys prior to this recording, the run of votes he was going to get was going to be late, and if he didn't get them, he was never going to be in contention. Mm. I think that's probably what happened. But look, I was quite happy with Ollie Wines to be a winner. He's a worthy winner, and I don't dislike him in any way, shape or form. So not the same can be said about other players, but I won't necessarily mention those. But
he is I think widely loved, isn't he? And he typifies the fairest and the best elements of the Brownlow, doesn't he? And what about yourself, Wiz? It's an interesting one. I always sit there and think, when did the ruckman stop getting looked at? When the, you know, defenders don't get looked at. You think of the '70s. I think of the 10 Brownlows in the '70s. I reckon 5 at least were ruckmen.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it's one of those things that shows a change in the game. And you know, we were really lucky in the '70s because there was an influx of fabulous ruckmen coming through at that time. You know, Nichols and Dempsey, and I mean, there was a long list of them, and they dominated the game and changed the game in many ways. So, yeah, the midfielder became a much more important role through this generation. And you know, they're the ones we see, and they get all their hands on the footy more often, et cetera, et cetera. And all this criticism around it's a midfielder's medal, and we've seen that in the past, but I actually believe this year that we had the best footballers in the competition vying for the lead in the Brownlow this year. It was kind of ironic. You see someone like Tom Hawkins sitting there, and they had their Zoom meeting and they're trying to catch up there. And I couldn't help feeling like he might have been happier playing with his kids because his last two seasons have been fantastic. But I'm not even sure he got a vote, you know. So, but you know, with that as an exception, probably by and large, I think the best performed players this season did win it. But I heard him talking on another TV station recently about, what do we do for Brownlow Night to recognise some of the others? I mean, does there need to be a Defenders Award? And we've got the Coleman Medal. Obviously, we can sort of ramp that up. I heard someone call Talkback Radio today and say we needed to go to a 5-4-3-2-1 voting system to allow defenders and forwards to get extra votes. But frankly, I don't think that would work. I think that would just make it a 7-hour count instead of a 3-hour count. And, no guarantee that forwards and defenders get votes. So I mean, I don't know what the answer is. So
I just think they have an all-Australian side. You pick there as a ruckman, you pick there as a full forward. I'll go through some stats. Last week's preliminary finals, was Max Gawn probably the best game of a ruckman you've seen? I rated it the best game I've ever seen of a ruckman. I think Jason Dunstall did too.
Yeah.
He only had 19 possessions. And we're talking about it as the best game we've ever seen of a ruckman, where Viney had 34, Oliver 27, and Petraka had 32. I put it into perspective. It is a midfielder's medal because they got the ball in the bloody hands all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you go to the Melbourne
game too, isn't it?
So yeah, it is. And you go to the Western Bulldogs preliminary final. McRae had 36. You know, and how many midfielders go through? Right now, there's 8 midfielders that go through the midfield. So in a game of footy, there's 16 midfielders. And they're around where the pill is all the time and they're rotated, so they're coming back on fresh. I don't buy into this, everyone. Yeah, it is going to be a midfielder's medal. What was it? Max Gawn was the only non-midfielder to finish in the top 30. And you know what? Yeah. I reckon they got it right.
One could argue that Max Gawn is a midfielder.
Exactly.
he's part of what we call the following division in the old days. And you're right, Brad, we're rotating 8 guys through those middle 4 positions, or in some teams we've got 11 or 12.
Yeah.
You know, when you played footy, because you're a lot older than me.
We had rubber boots.
If you could pick your 4, there'd be a ruckman, a ruck rover, a centreman and a rover. And you might have a second rover and a ruck rover waiting in the forward line to rotate. That's it. So, and when these great midfielders were resting, they'd go forward and kick goals. So,
when was the last time
a totally different game?
When was the last time a midfielder won the Coleman? We don't hear anyone kicking up about that.
True. Yeah,
it's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it's right. I think they got it right. I think, and don't take it away from the umpires. They get it right. We all thought Ollie Wines, Marcus Bontempelli, and Clayton Oliver were going to be in the first 6 or 7, didn't we? Well, they were your top 3, so I think they get it right. And I remember talking to you guys prior to the count. Dan threw a name, Darcy Parrish, and Owen threw the name Sam Walsh. Well, there's 4th and 5th.
Yeah.
I think the umpires get it right.
Yeah, Bradley, I always agree with you, but let's not get me started on umpires all the same. So in terms of these are the umpires that will decide if you kick the ball forward, it bounces out of bounds, you've done it deliberately. I don't know why anybody would deliberately do that. So some of them sometimes just demonstrate a lack of understanding or reading of the game. You know, that don't really understand. So then you see something like a Petraka, I think it was, who had 15 clangers in his 34 possessions
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago. just before the end of the season. So that's 15 turnovers he's created, right? He got the three votes.
Yeah, I don't blame the umpires though, Wiz. They have to adjudicate. They have to adjudicate an impossible game. We have more rules than any other code that I know of.
No, that's all true. And I think they get seduced by the guy that gets the footy the most. They don't really, you know. That, I mean, Petrarca got three votes in a game where he turned the footy over 15 times.
Hey, the other one with the midfielders too, and I hate to harp on the point, but you go through when all the clubs have had their best and fairest. Go through now. These are done by the clubs. Go through and see how many midfielders win the best and fairest. It's going to be at the same percentage.
Mm.
There won't be too many ruckmen or key forwards or key backs that win a club best and fairest.
Yeah, the outliers off the top of my head are Josh Gibson won two in Hawthorn's three premiership era. I know he played up the ground a bit, but he was a...
Oh, no, I mean now. I mean now. The game's different now.
Even, in 5 years.
They rotate through that midfield. Yeah, I reckon the last 2-3 years, the game's gone to a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And I love watching it.
So now there's there's another kind of midfielder. So the big bull like Ollie Wines and Petrarca and Dangerfield and
Steels.
But there's another type. There's this sort of superhuman athlete, almost like a hybrid, you know, that can play in the ruck, they can play in key defence, they can play as a ruck rover for 10 minutes, they can go forward and kick a goal. I'm thinking of a Blitzavs or someone like that, you know. And he can win club best and fairest. So there's those two types of players. Unless you're an absolute ball-winning bull, you've got to be able to run 1,500 metres in only 3 minutes 42 or something, you know. So
Kudafidis was a bit ahead of his time, wasn't he? Exact guy you're talking about, in a way.
Although you could argue that Kuda was probably the precursor to today's Bontempelli and rather than the Blitzavs, the Bontempelli, Wines. And well, these guys are all 6'2", 6'3". And 6'3" gets your game at centre-half forward in a previous era.
Yeah, the one that stands out to me is Cripps at Carlton.
Yes.
Yeah. And Bontempelli.
He's a key forward size.
Yeah. They were playing in the ruck. I seen a picture of, now Dan would know this because he's such a historian. I don't know if you've seen the photo of Cripps standing near John Nicholls.
Yeah, well, I've met Big Nick, and I went in there expecting to be quite intimidated, and he wasn't really hardly any taller than me, and he'd obviously lost a lot of weight from his playing days. But so it wasn't the same. You look at him going, wow, this guy was the ruckman.
Yeah.
And that's, what, 50 years ago. Yeah, so it's evolved two generations or something. And
he had thighs on him like queen-size mattresses.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't get around him.
What a player he was.
But you're right, he was the feared ruckman.
Mm. He was 6'2".
Sam Newman's only 6'3 or 6'4". That wouldn't get him a game at centre-half forward now. And he was a ruckman. So
the
game has changed. We have to embrace that. So we don't want to be accused of being silly old men. We'll have to change the name of the podcast. But they're wonderful athletes, today's players. Mm. Let's be clear about that. All those guys you saw vying for that Brownlow medal last night are incredible athletes.
I love it. Yep. Yeah.
We're going to talk about the grand final teams in a sec, but Brad, I haven't spoken to you for a while, mate, and I know you're a massive lover of Collingwood, and I just thought maybe it's probably been the greatest year of all time.
I love it when Collingwood choke. It's football's greatest joke.
Is that the one you mean? That Collingwood? Yeah.
I haven't heard that for a while, but I reckon you've been just salivating all year and everything that almost on a daily matter something else happens at Magpie Land.
What makes you think that?
They with the music too.
I don't know what makes you think that. They won 6, lost 16, only had a percentage of 85.6 and just beat North Melbourne home. But I don't know what you think I hate Collingwood.
Well, and it's officially their lowest ever finish, 17th. So it's a major. But just how have you viewed the Pies, Brad? I know you're a big Saints man, but not the biggest lover of Collingwood. So you would have watched on with a little bit of a glint in your eye with everything that was going on.
I certainly did. And I must say, though, I've said this, and I've coached at clubs, and I've said this all my life. If you're not right off field, the on-field don't matter. It's not going to work. And they've been terrible off-field. And as much as I like to give Collingwood a clip, Nathan Buckley has copped the wrath of how bad they are off-field. That's the way I see it.
For him?
I do. For Nathan Buckley, I feel sorry for.
Yeah.
Yeah, pure professional.
Oh, sorry to butt in. I know Bucks's mum, and we had a chat probably a couple of months ago, and yeah, how they treated him towards the end for a favourite son really left a sour taste in the family's mouth. Not just because he got sacked, but there was just a lot of poor communication and poor ways that they dealt with it, and how they treated the family wasn't great either at the very end. So I've interviewed Bucks a couple of times. He's one of the best blokes you'll meet in footy. He gives you the time of day when other coaches won't. I'm sure you've all interviewed coaches in the past that have moved you on pretty quickly, but Bucks was the other way. He sort of felt like you should go because he's I'm holding you up. But yeah. As much as we love to see the Pies maybe capitulate every now and again, it was a pretty good bloke that they were knifing, really. So it was hard to see that part of it, I thought.
Yeah, and it's happened to me. It happens at local level, it happens everywhere, and Nathan Buckley, I don't know any coaching right now that put more time into that football club over a longer period of time. He was treated like crap in the end.
So I think it's a symptom of a greater issue. Buckley was appallingly treated at the end, and he was the scapegoat.
Yep.
For other problems and the fire sale they had the year before. My view of, I'm not a hater of Collingwood. In fact, you know, one of my best mates is a Collingwood fan, so I always want to see them go well so that he's happy. I've admired them for a long time as just one of the great sporting organisations in this country. But I think, you know, the way Buckley was treated is a symptom of some of that. I mean, since that debacle with the president, and what's been going on in the boardroom ever since in the administration, it's I think that's where the bus crash is, by the way. And it's interesting to see that there was a couple of coaching candidates, including Ross Lyon, decided they weren't available when it came to talk about the Collingwood role because they felt that commercially they were a complete bus crash. So watch this space. I mean, I think they've got – when you hear the new coach speak, by the way, you feel a real warmth from him. I think he's a really genuine man, and all his colleagues say that he can coach, but I think he might not be driving a Ferrari.
Yeah, well, that can change within a month in the job. Go back to Brendan Bolton, how he come into it and how he come out of it. They were two different people.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And, yeah, you just hope they're getting the right people around them. I mean, as you guys have said, you know, I've heard Mark Thompson and guys like that speak, and they say, hey, if the off-field's not happening, it doesn't matter what we do.
That's right.
It just has to be a full family involvement here. And the Pies, until they fix that up, it is messy stuff. And there's a lot of uncertainty around that for staff and players and everyone, isn't there?
Now, Wiz, can I ask you, know the media really well, the media side of footy. Nathan Buckley, now we both know what's a better job, coach or media. I say media every day of the week because there's no stress whatsoever. But would Nathan Buckley, he would command top dollar in the media right now, I would have thought.
Oh, they'll be throwing money at him.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm sure that he's already signed something off. But I think you're right. There's no stress in it. And you can see there's guys have been in the media for a long time that have got the ability to coach, and they've chosen not to. But I feel like Nathan Buckley, and I don't know him. I certainly don't know him the way you would, Dan. But I feel like the competitor within won't allow him to sit in the media box for too long.
Well, I reckon he's crazy.
Oh, I do too. He's now just experiencing for the first time, probably in his adult life away from that fish tank that he was in. But I there'll be competitive urges churning away somewhere. I reckon he'll want another crack at
it. Go and take up tennis, Bucks.
All right, boys. Look, that's probably enough about the Magpies. I know we could talk about them all day, and we could probably talk about Carlton for that long as well. But we've got a pretty big game coming up finally this week, which we've all been hanging for. And what you want at the end of every year is the best two teams in the comp. And when you look at the form line over the season, I know the Doggies dropped off for a couple of weeks, but let's be honest, they were the front runners for most of the year. And yes, they had a little drop away, but even Essendon in 2000 had a little drop late in for a couple of weeks leading into the finals. And it was just enough to, they took on some more training, and then they were able to sort of boost their way and be primed for the finals. And the Doggies just seem to like 2016. They look like they've timed their run a bit. And hopefully this hasn't stalled them this week off, but they had some really good momentum going. So, Brad, I'll start with you, mate. What have you seen from these two teams this year that sort of makes you realise they're the best two teams?
I think it goes back to what we spoke about with the Brownlow medal. I think it's the midfields. They're top-line midfields. They're A-graders. Like Melbourne, I go with, say, Oliver, Petrarca, Viney, and the best ruckman in the game, Gawn. Those four. And then you look at the Western Bulldogs. They probably lack a real ruckman. Well, they definitely haven't got one in the category of Gawn, but Martin comes back in and served his purpose last week. Then you've got guys like McRae, Bontempelli and Liberatore. These are A-grade midfielders. And that's why I reckon these two sides are playing off in a grand final. Very similar to Richmond when they had Martin flying and Cochin flying, guys like that. So it's the game's based around that midfield. But then it goes into defences, doesn't it? And you look at Lever and May that can take marks inside defensive 50 and Salem that runs off. I think Hibbard's been a good additive to them. And young Brett Bowie's son, Jack, hadn't he been a ripper since coming into the... His seventh game's going to be a grand final. I mean, that is just unbelievable. But then your backs in the Western Bulldogs are rippers too. I've liked the improvement of Gardner. Keith will come back into that side. Then you got Dale and Daniel. Well, he's just he catch it to pieces with his feet, and Easton Wood up back. This is going to be – I can't pick it, and we'll talk about that later, no doubt, tips. But I think it's the midfield and the back six of both sides. Who can take more marks up the big back six that's going to make you rebound off run off? Like if they can take marks in the back half for Melbourne and Bowie and Salem run off, or does Daniel and Dale – and Dre run off with guys like Gardner and Keith taking marks. That's the key. It's going to be a ripper.
But you, Wiz?
Well, I think Brad summed that up pretty well. It's certainly about top-line talent, but I'm really, when listening to Brad's summary of it, I feel like they're both really evenly matched in the same areas. They're both capable of kicking big scores. They're both capable of defending really well, working together as a unit. It's some of the best Premiership teams in the last 10, 15 years have had great defensive units that work together, you know, held up by the Scarlets of the world and the Hodges at Hawthorn. And you certainly see that in May and Lever at Melbourne in particular. So you just wonder if they're that evenly matched. It's going to be about the little things. So the errors, the clangers, the turnovers. And so it's a bit of an age-old thing. We hear it in local footy all the time. But maybe it's about your bottom six players, not your top six, and the mistakes they make and the impact they could potentially have. And you think about, say, an Adelaide when the Shane Ellis moved to forward and he's kicked the five goals there, and he was one of the – he would have been a bottom six player for Adelaide that day, but it all went well for him. So I feel like the winner might come from something that we're not expecting, and it could be in the bottom six and the level of mistakes that we see in those players.
And I was going to bring that up myself, Wiz. So two very like-minded legends we are. But you do hear coaches talk about that over the journey, that it, you know, your top end generally are going to perform pretty much at their best level on the big stage. So it is the matter of what those bottom six or so do. So do you sense that either team has an edge in that capacity in terms of the guys at the bottom end of that list of 23?
Yeah, look, I probably resonate with a bit of both of Brad and Wiz in terms of their thoughts and feelings. I really feel that for Doggies to be able to win, they need to nullify as much as possible Max Gawn's influence on the game. I think he'll be a key indicator in how well Melbourne go in that game. I really feel that it might sound basic, but whoever handles the pressure the best, there's going to be all sorts of players coming from everywhere, just wanting that pill. And who is going to cope under that pressure? Who's going to be forced into the quick dump kick out in the wing or on the flank? Who's going to have the composure, just hold it for a little bit longer, find a better option, free it up and get a bit more flow going, try and break open the game a bit more. I feel like both these sides will want to play that game, but they'll also be manic in their pressure. So who's going to come out on top? And look, might not be either of them. They might just be at each other's throats all day, and that would be good viewing from a neutral perspective. I think that the back lines probably slightly way better towards Melbourne. They're better with their talls, but Doggies are probably better with their smalls. And forward lines are probably, I'm leaning towards Melbourne a little bit as well, but I think Doggies bat deeper in their midfield than what Demons do. So from Brad's perspective, I think it's going to be a battle of the midfields there to see who gains ascendancy there. And from Wizards' perspective, the bottom six as well, I really thought that you look back in past grand finals, who comes out on the day, it's usually the team with the better bottom six will come out on the day. So I think that is important as well.
Melbourne's got a real feeling of Geelong 07 about it. I mean, I'm still umming and ahhing who I'll tip myself, but when you really sit down and look at Melbourne's form coming in, you just feel like I was stupid enough to tip Port Adelaide in the 07 granny, and I think it was because I just didn't want to see this all-conquering Geelong team go on and win the flag, but I was humbled within about 5 minutes of the grand final when they just tore them to shreds. But I don't know if Melbourne will win by that much this week, but you just, there's that sense of destiny that only comes... the Bulldogs, they might have been there when they won it, but probably not as strong in the belief that this team could actually just storm away and win the break this hoodoo. Wiz, what are your feelings towards that? Because you hear Petrarca talk and you hear Goodwin and those guys talk, and you think, geez, it's very much Geelong, isn't it?
It does feel similar, but it probably feels similar to Geelong of 89 as well, coming into that against an all-conquering Hawthorn, and they were trying to break a drought back then. It's interesting. I heard Malcolm Blight a few years ago, of course, famously coached Geelong to three grand finals.
Yep.
Three, and yep. Adelaide to a couple. And he was asked, with all of the talent that he had in that Geelong side, you know, Ablett, Couch, Stone and Brownless, so many of them, Bairstow, he went to the well so often and returned with nothing. He goes to Adelaide and, you know, with someone like Shane Allen kicking five goals and, you know, they win two in a row. What was the difference between the two? What did he do differently? And his admission at that point was, it's just on the day. Now, what frightens me about that is all the analysis that we've been absorbing and that we're talking about ourselves, and we see how evenly they match up and all the systems that they work with now, it is a different game. It could still be something as simple as on the day. Mm. Yeah, we saw the Cats in the preliminary final. They had a shocking night, you know. So they're the things we don't know that are going to happen. The funny bounce of a ball like Stephen Milne in that grand final against Collingwood a few years ago, and all of those sort of ingredients, you feel like they all come together for this one. I think that's what we're all looking forward to. You're talking about the pressure at the contest and all that sort of stuff. Gee, it's hard to work out who's actually going to win it, you know. You see vulnerabilities in both of these sides, and in particular, there's been a couple of sides that have highlighted a weakness in that Melbourne defence if they're able to separate May and Lever or go in shorter and don't allow them to work together and all of that sort of stuff. But it's much easier said than done, because when you're bringing it in, you've got the Melbourne midfield just physically harassing you to within a millimetre of your life. So I don't know. I've just got a feeling that the result in the end is going to be an on-the-day thing.
Brad, yeah, and there's been examples of that too, Wiz, over the years. I can take you right back to 1948 and the Bombers dominated all season, lost two games for the year. Then they kicked 727 in the grand final and they drew the bloody thing with Melbourne and they lost the replay. So
that's the year Wiz was doing his HSC.
Yeah, I might not have been there, but you can check with Brad. He was probably boundary umpire.
Well, more recent times, North Melbourne kicked themselves out of that premiership against the Crows, didn't they, in 98. But you do see it. Geelong kicked them out of in 2008 against Hawthorn as well. It is an on-the-day thing. And, Brad, I'm just looking through these lists, and you look at the players that both clubs have brought in from other clubs, that they've been quite smart with. A couple of them you might have gone, oh, why'd you get him? But then when you see them now and how they make that, I'm thinking of guys like Ben Brown, who has finally been able to sort of find his place in that team, and he's really thriving at the right time of the year. And then you look at the Dogs and you got Mitch Hannon, who come from the Demons, just guys like that. Even Josh Shackey, who I thought was done and dusted, you know, but what he's done the last, certainly last week, but the last couple of games, he's sort of refound himself, and Bevo's been able to get a bit out of him. Both teams have been quite clever. Steph Martin's another one that's come to the Dogs. They're all going to play a key part, Brad, aren't they, on grand final day?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And when we talk about Ben Brown, the first one you mentioned, we probably thought a month ago that didn't work. It didn't look like it was going to work. He comes back in, he takes seven marks in a preliminary final and kicks two goals. And then you say a guy like Hannon has 14 possessions and takes five marks forward. And Sashi, he had six grabs forward. Now, these guys, the three that you talk about, really have paid dividends in that one game, a preliminary final. They've paid their clubs back in tenfold.
Mind you, they were lining up against witches' hats that day.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were witches' hats because of the way those sides were playing.
Yeah,
I don't think those two preliminary final wins, now Melbourne by 83 points and Bulldogs by 71, I don't think I've seen two sides. I watched the game on Friday night and I thought that's the best game I've seen a side play in a preliminary final. Mm. And you know what? I changed my mind 24 hours later.
Yeah, it's amazing. Have we ever seen two preliminary finals quite like that before? Mm. I mean, this is pretty unique, and it makes us feel like we've got the best two in the end. I reckon there were four or five really good sides all year, but they don't hand out big silver cups in July. They only do it now. So you've got to be the best team in September.
And
I reckon there's an X factor, though, boys. There's somewhere that we haven't talked about. The coaches don't necessarily win. They can't go out and kick it themselves. But there's something about Luke Beveridge. And this goes back to what he did with St. Bede's Mentone Tigers and the Ammos. No one's ever done it before, C, B, A in consecutive years. And he leaves a legacy, and even in local footy, with boys that played in that team. Some of them have gone on and coached elsewhere, and they've turned ordinary teams into good ones with the same thing. And it's like a little secret, the magic dust. No one knows what it is. The special love that goes on within the team. He's got it, and people play for him. And in 2016, you could see it. There was that special ingredient. And he's finding things in Sashi and some of these other players again. If there is an X factor, I think it might be him.
Yeah, and I think the other bloke's the same too, Wiz. I think, you talk to the Essendon guys and they say that Goody was the best assistant coach Essendon ever had. And I seen that in Cairns, covering the footy last year, the way he and Bevo, exactly like Bevo, and you can see a lot in body language, the way he shakes hands with players is that real mateship side handshake. And that, you know what I mean? And there's that, yeah. It's an Indigenous thing. The Indigenous players do it. And then they hug when they handshake. You can't manufacture that. That's real.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'll be honest, and I defer to your experience in that regard. I haven't seen that in Goody so much. And a good organised assistant coach is what every senior coach wants. Maybe it's just the camera goes at the wrong time, but what I hear, I don't get the same feeling from Goody as I do from Beveridge. That's just me. So, and look, it's an opinions game, isn't it? Everybody's got a different view. So
I've seen it with Grant Thomas with the Saints. And I think he had the same. I agree with you with Bevo. I totally agree. And let's remember, his old man was one of the greatest recruiters in the game. He got me to St Kilda. I lasted 6 weeks.
Well, and some
mistakes
he's never
stopped
paying for.
I don't know if we saw the same handshakes with Mulderhouse at Carlton with those.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, but you're right with Goody. He's a different coach to Bevo, I think, but you can tell the players just love him, and that's the key, isn't it? And I can even think of James Hurd at Essendon. For what anyone thinks of Hurdy as a coach and what happened, his players loved him, and they would have run through brick walls for him. And those sort of coaches would just give anything to bottle that, because you don't necessarily get it everywhere. Obviously, Pagan had it at North Melbourne, but he didn't have it at Carlton because they weren't prepared to work as hard as the Kangaroos and really buy in. And you're right, these two coaches seem like they've got the buy-in of the entire list.
And you go back to Nathan Buckley. It didn't come natural to Nathan Buckley. He had to work over time, didn't he, to sort of get that to happen? Yeah, he did.
As a coach, and I've coached, and Brad, I know you've coached a lot, I don't think you ever have the whole team.
No.
You know? You don't get all the eyeballs, and but you know when you've got them. So you stand in front of a group at quarter time, and you know there was a couple of kids I can think of right now. I could see their faces. They were this far away from me, and it wouldn't matter what I asked them to do, they would do it. But and you'd often wish if I had a team full of those sort of blokes or that committed to you mentally and emotionally, that gee, what could you do? I was never able to reproduce it. I don't know whether you were, Brad, but certainly I see that in Beveridge, and there's been others in the past, including the fellow at St Kilda you mentioned. So, but I just stand by for that to be a factor.
Yeah, and the other one is too, is that the way they've had to travel with this COVID and be together, it's both clubs, I mean all clubs, it's got the clubs, there's no doubt, it's got the clubs closer together, isn't it, the playing group.
Yeah. I think Beveridge has really done that us against them thing with that a little bit too.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of John Northey about that. Evidently he was very much an us against the world sort of coach. Yeah.
Good Ballarat boy.
Who are you sort of thinking are potential Norm Smith medal winners from either team, Owen, in terms of who can be the game breaker that might do the Dusty Martin and just burst it open when the game's in the balance?
Look, if Gawn can take a stranglehold on that game, I reckon he's a fair shot. If it's a midfield dominating performance from the Doggies, I think Bailey Smith is in a really rich form or rich vein of form, and he looks like one of the more likely ones to sort of take the game away from the opposition given the opportunity. So, as I say, it could be any number of players that on their day they're going to take it away from anyone else. But yeah, Gawn off Melbourne for mine, Bailey Smith for Doggies for me.
Yeah, Bailey Smith's just been, I think he's on track to claim the Gary Ayres medal for the best finals performer if he puts in a half decent show this week, doesn't he? It's a pretty amazing performance, really, from him.
Definitely. Definitely. The thing I'm interested in, perhaps it's the coach from a long, long time ago in me. They had two preliminary finals where everything went right. And on grand final day, for everybody, things don't always go right. And I love watching the reactions in players when the moment comes and something's not going right and how do they deal with it. Mm. You know, and the example of that recently, I think St Kilda Collingwood, when Revolt going into the open goal and he has the kick, smothered the ball, basically just almost tapped out of his hand as he's trying to kick it into the third tier.
Why would you bring that up? Now, Owen and I barrack for St Kilda.
He's done it twice. He's mentioned the Milne bounce. Now he's mentioned that.
So the big grand final moments and what happens next? You know, and what I used to say as a coach, someone, I don't care. It's terrific what you've done there, or it doesn't matter what it's bad. The only thing I'm interested in is what you do next. Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm interested to see when things don't go right, because they won't all the time. Yeah. What happens next? That's when, you know, that X factor in certain individuals comes out. I think they're one of the great things about grand final day.
Yeah, well, you think, you know, I can reel them off, but you think of Dermy going down the first 30 seconds of 89 and they cut the camera to the bench and Alan Jeans is pointing and screaming and yelling, but, you know, that's the chaos that he may not have factored in too much happening so early in the game, you know, so he's had to think on the fly. Or you think of the Cats keep missing in 08 and, you know, the Hawks are having to adjust how the Cats are starting to panic. How are we going to, you know, break through here? And then Stuart Dew and that turn it on and change the game.
There was a moment before that, just before half time, when Cam Mooney had a shot at goal from about 6 metres out.
Right.
And he admitted later that he was more intent on running in and bumping the guy after he kicked the goal, the man on the mark. Right.
Yeah.
He missed it. And it's what happened to the whole team after that, you know?
Yeah.
Then Stuart Dew comes in. So those moments, they're the big moments. And the winning team are the ones that recognise when the moment arrives and what are they going to do with it.
I interviewed Jordan Lewis the other day for something, and we spoke about that game and hanging in, and he said when Cam missed that goal, the lift it gave us, because we were able to look around, and the deflation that it took out of them, because they busted and busted and they just couldn't put the death knell in, you know.
That was the massive moment, and there was still half a game of footy to go.
Yeah, so that's right. So that's those guys that are going to step up in the big moments. And you look at both lists and there's 5, 6, 7, 8 blokes that could do that for either team. I mean, Bontempelli's had one heck of a year. He probably would have won the Brownlow almost any other year than this year. He just couldn't quite get those last couple of votes, but he's been unbelievable. I found it. I was watching the Dogs prelim, and about a minute into the game, I got a text from the great Jeff Blethyn, the former Bomber High Flyer, and he said, "Why the hell is?" And I've got to think who it was. Why the hell is the tagger on the bench and Libba's standing there on his own in the centre? And Libba got the first two clearances, and he said they're done. And I sort of said, "Oh, it's a bit early, mate." But he just said the mindset's different. They should have went and just into Libba at the start, and he just felt that there was a real. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with those. Will they put someone on one of those key midfielders? Brad, do you have any thoughts on that? And you know, because Libba is just such a key player in getting the ball moving.
Yeah, I think both coaches will back their own structures at the start, but right away, if someone's getting off the leash, say if it's Oliver getting off the leash for Melbourne, you've got to put someone onto him, because as Dusty Martin's shown in a couple of grand finals, if you don't pull him back and get him on that leash, he'll win his team a grand final. And guys like Oliver and Petrarca can do that, and so can guys like Bontempelli and Liberatore. So it goes either way. If one of those get off the leash, you've got to – and they'd have a plan B for these guys. Or you just got to close them down. You've got to do it.
You'd have a pretty short leash, though, Brad. I remember I think it was Foxtel or Channel 7 put a stopwatch on Dusty Martin in last year's grand final. On off every time he had the football in his hands. And in the second half, when he kicked four goals, the total amount of time he spent with his hands on the leather was 7 seconds.
Yeah.
He won a Norm Smith medal in 7 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's the thing, because these players, and Oliver's another one of those, and Pickett, these sort of guys, they only need that amount of touches and they will destroy you. And so you've just got to close them down. And if you don't, well, you're going to pay the price. And I agree with Jeff Blethyn, Dan, because I watched that game too. And when I seen that guy sitting on the bench, I think Wayne Carey might have even said it in the call.
He called it out. Yeah. It was a mistake.
It was a huge mistake. And in the end, then it was gone. And that was a good midfield. That midfield, Port Adelaide, now Bulldogs have got a good midfield, but they were up against Wines and Boak, Eamon and Butters. They're good midfielders.
Very good.
And the Bulldogs tore them apart because they were allowed to.
Yeah, you're right. And so, again, going to be away from that midfield, it's that X-factor player, Pickett, you mentioned him before.
Yeah.
Just someone that could explode in and contribute 7 seconds that can change history. You know, the one at everyone's talking about Smith at the Bulldogs, but I think Waitman's the one.
Well, he's the one everyone's forgotten about, haven't they?
I expect him to explode into this game early. So your first goal market's this weekend. Gamble responsibly, of course. But I'd be if you got your hands on that a reasonable price, I reckon Waitman and Pickett would be the two that you'd have your money on.
I can tell you right now what Goody will do. If Liberatore starts getting his hands on it too much, Harms gets the job straight away and Harms locks him down.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to see that contest. That'd be great. Watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another bloke who I don't know how we're going for time, but I'll just keep talking anyway, mate, because everyone wants to hear about grand final week. I might actually take us right up to the game, because it's been a long fortnight. But blokes like Ed Langdon and that have been really driving forces as well, haven't they? Guys that you probably, you know, they can get lost a bit in the fact of who you're going to man up, who you're going to go tight on, and then you get a guy like him or Taylor Duray at the Dogs. You know, they're doing things that probably they're able to do things because there's so many great players you're trying to watch. And then you get these next-tier players that are actually really impacting the game.
They're the two. Langdon. I want to see Langdon on Hunter, Lachie Hunter, and go at it off their wings. I just think that would be Langdon, the space he covers and runs through his space, and Hunter's the same. What a matchup. And then on the other wing, Bailey Smith and Brayshaw. Oh, wow. It's, incredible.
I want to backtrack to Stephen May and that hamstring. Now, we're not physiotherapists, but he clearly had some, they call it hamstring awareness now, Brad, don't they?
Yeah. I aware it's between my bum and the back of my knee.
Yeah. That's right. So I usually wake up on Sunday morning with a little bit of frontal lobe awareness. So hamstring awareness. But they put him back out there. So maybe it wasn't as bad as he thought. But he's been doing nothing but jogging laps for 2 weeks. So how does he feel going into a grand final knowing that the first sprint at the first contest, it could go or it could be okay? Is that going to bother him all day or do you put it out of your mind? How does he work with that?
It'll be both. Only he'll know how good it is or how bad it is. I had a history of hammies, so I know what they can play on your mind after you've had a – and he's had a spate of them. But I watched his body language on his phone in the rooms after the game, laying on the ground on the Channel 7 footage. He's fine. But you could tell in his body language because he would have been shattered. And he would know with a hamstring. He would have known there and then, oh, this is no good.
He was emotional at some point when they wanted to take him down to the room.
That's the initial time when it goes. Yeah. You think, oh, geez. But then if he's come back and been able to go on the ground like he was, he was fine. And then good, he did the right thing by getting him off later when the game, they were up by so much.
I think he left him out there too long, to be honest.
I agree.
I'm surprised he risked it in the first place to put him back out there. But it's all history now. And Keith's the other one for the Doggies. He's going in with a bit of a niggle. So, I mean, you just don't know, do you?
Yeah, I think he'll be fine too. I think he'll be fine too. I really feel for Zane Cordy. He'll miss out because Keith will come back for him.
Righto, do you blokes know any of these? Abby May, Baker Boy, John Butler, you've probably heard of, Gina Williams and Guy Goose, Vicky Thorne and Donna Simpson, Stella Donnelly, Eskimo Joe, you've probably heard of, and Colin Hay streaming in from LA. I'm not sure what that means, but that is our musical ensemble for Grand Final Day. I'm sure they'll do a great job, but they don't jump out of my memory in terms of trying to picture what songs they're going to be singing.
Now, Dan, it strikes me that you're the music guy around here. I think we probably should be asking you that question, but I can answer that. I haven't heard of any of them except for Eskimo Joe and Colin Hay from Network. I heard an acoustic version recently of Overkill and it just gave me goosebumps. It's fantastic. I hope he does that one. He probably won't, but that'll be good. Isn't Mike Brady doing up there Kazali from the MCG or something?
Somewhere in Melbourne, I assume the G, Last year they pre-recorded. I would have liked it to have been live. Maybe it's just too hard to do, but geez, that would have really set the chills going.
Yeah.
So you'd think they could have flown him over to snuck him in somehow because he needs to be at the game.
They couldn't get Eddie McGuire there or...
No, or Koshy or anyone. The whole game's become... Sorry, my phone's going off. But the whole game has become a bit of a... You know, we're basing it around how we can do halftime entertainment under lights. So bit of pressure on these guys to try and sell the whole thing, Brad. And I'm not sure. I can't remember. Last year they had Shepherd. Shepherd were okay. They're a hometown Brisbane band. I don't know what your thoughts are, Brad, on this mix.
Halftime comes around, Dan, and I'm on the barbecue. I couldn't tell you. I can tell you who played in 1990. Angry Anderson on the Batmobile. 91, around VFL Park. When your good friend... the big Paul Deer won the Norm Smith. Now, I don't watch. I'm just a footy purist. I watch it for the footy. You could have the Wiggles on. I still wouldn't watch it. I'm not into the entertainment because I don't call it entertainment. I'm the entertainment for me is the footy.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
But
except
you are a big fan of the Purple Wiggle, though.
I am. Wake up, Jeff.
So this year we've got Andrew Embley presenting the Norm Smith Medal, John Worsfold presenting the Jock McHale Medal to the winning coach, and either Gary Lyon or Chris Grant to present the Premiership Cup. They'll be both chomping at the bit to hopefully get up there and hand that over. Brad, your thoughts on the Norm Smith?
I'll pick one. I'll do it real quick. I'll pick one from Melbourne, Petrarca, because he has – haunted me, as Owen will tell you. We had the chance at St Kilda to get him at pick number one, and we went for McCartan. And every time I watch Petrarca play, I think the bloke's a genius. He's a bull. I love him. And every time I watch him play, I think you should be in red, white and black, and it kills me. So I reckon him for Melbourne, and how can you go past Bontempelli or Liberatore for the Bulldogs?
Whiz.
Oh, look, I concur. I think this grand final, more than most, it's almost impossible to, prior to the game, to pick out who's going to be the best player on the ground. There's so many things that can influence that. Mm. I'll go along with Brad. I think you could possibly throw in a Smith or a Waitman. And for the Demons, maybe Oliver again, he's going to do a lot of physical work. Petrarca will finish it off up the front, all that sort of stuff. Oh, look, who knows? I mean, we don't even know who's voting on it this year, and that seems to change year in. You're not getting a vote this year, are you, Brad?
No, they haven't asked me either.
I think Dan should. Dan's written the greatest book of all time on Norm Smith medalists. How you haven't had a phone call about this, Dan, this year is beyond my oath, because I can tell you over the years there's been some absolute clowns that have got a vote on that panel.
Wow.
and the old boys club, so I haven't got the invitation yet to the getting into the voting crew, I should, you're right.
I might start a petition for that.
I might try and do that for next year, if you could, please.
That would be a great promotion for the book too, Dan.
When you hang, and then ask to present the Norm Smith and hang the book over their neck.
Yeah.
What a promotion. Only 50 million people watch the game.
That's right. Yeah, I know. I've got an interesting, I interviewed an umpire from 1973 grand final. It was his first grand final. And I said, trying to think who it was now. I think it was Ian Robinson. And I asked him, I'm just looking at the umpires that might be selected for the games that sparked my memory. But I said, how'd you prepare leading into the grand final, Carlton Richmond coming up? And he said, you know what happened with umpires back then? We used to, they'd break it down to two. So they'd get me and another bloke who may have been Bill Deller, perhaps. So me and Bill went to the game. And we weren't told until 2 hours before the game that it was our, because it was only one umpire at the time, that it was our day to umpire the grand final. So he said, you know, Bill had done a few and he was experienced, and it was my first one. And I'm told 2 hours before the game that I had to go out and umpire this grand final. And it was one of the most violent grand finals of all time. So it was just chaos. That's the famous Neil Baum whacking Southby and all that. So I was just looking at the umpires here and thinking, geez, I think you guys are going to know a little bit more in advance than Ian Robinson did. But Len Gathaboy, Matty Stevic.
Yeah, he'll get it for
sure. I've been pretty critical of the umpies this year. I think it's been a schmozzle from week to week. But I reckon Matty Stevic's been one of the most consistent of the lot. Just happens to be from my hometown. But he's already done 8 grand finals. Amazing. So I reckon he'd be one that I would assume is going to get the nod.
He doesn't get overawed.
They get a decent payday, the umpires, too, for grand final day. Matt would probably own half a Liam Gather by now, wouldn't he?
Is that right? They get a bit, do they? Yeah. Well, they should, I guess, yeah.
Him, Roughhead and Dan.
Yeah, and Dyson Heppel's the other one.
And
yeah,
Dyson Heppel.
A few statues due to go up at some point, I must admit. But I think I've got to pay for mine, but the others get theirs for free. But, it's an exciting day for everyone, and the umpires included. I find it interesting every Brownlow night that they never say thanks to the umpires, because you know that when they win, they never say thanks, because it's the umpires that have voted on them. It's not the media. Yeah. It's not it's no one else.
As long as Razor Ray doesn't get a gig, I'll be happy.
No, I think they've already dropped him.
He got sacked from the prelims as well, didn't
he? Yeah,
he did. I wonder what he did wrong.
Well,
I don't know. I thought he was their golden boy, but
I just think he tries to take over the moment. The moment's about the game and the players and the gladiators, not him. And I think he tends to forget that.
Don't know much about him as an umpire, but he's a pretty good finance broker. He was my he brokered my home loan, actually, Chamberlain and Co. And he's a good little fella too.
Yeah. I've heard he's a good bloke. But,
I've heard he's a good bloke, but they reckon Charles Manson was a good bloke too.
I didn't think we'd make that comparison tonight. But
it's good to see that Brad's attitude towards umpires has softened over the years.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. I'm just trying to think what else we need to discuss about this game, boys. Anything that I've missed?
Will there be a streaker?
Who's going to win?
Who's going to win? That'll help. Who? Yeah, will there be a streaker? It's interesting, you know, the famous one in 1982 with Helen D'Amico, but a lady dressed up as the Batwoman and ran across the 89 grand.
Yes.
So much going on. I don't think anyone noticed. And Steve or Matt Phoebe, I think Steve Phoebe the other day posted a picture on Facebook of himself in the 88 grand final when the Hawks flogged the Demons. And he's just watching as a woman runs across the middle of the ground in 88. So I don't know when the last one would have been, maybe 89. I don't think you'd get away with it these days. But, yeah, that would certainly bring things to life, wouldn't it?
Well, they like their beer in Perth, so I reckon there'll be someone drunk enough.
Have you seen that, though, the fence in the stadium at Perth? There's a long drop down to the ground.
Yes, yeah.
A streaker could easily break an ankle before they even get started. I think we've all grown up a bit now. As a nation, we've probably got a bit past that now. They're more likely to be having a shoey or something.
No, that's right. Well, so the internet wasn't around in those days. You can just punch it up on the internet now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In fact, lucky the internet wasn't around back in our day, Bradley.
Come to think of it, can we wind this up, fellas? Because I've got to have a look at some.
Lucky they didn't have the old camera phones in the Saints disco back in Brad's day.
Oh, let's just put Jesus. It that
way. Tips for the game, boys. As I said, it's early in the week and I'm yet to fully decide who I'm going to pick. I'm probably just slightly Melbourne, but I really like what the Dogs have done. So in a way, my heart's probably heart's Dogs and head's Melbourne. But what about you, boys? Start with you, O.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dan. Exactly the way you worded it, head Melbourne, heart Dogs. So I agree it could go either way. And as Wiz said, it could just be an on-the-day thing. So, yep, that's me.
Wiz?
The sensible Wiz says there's no such thing, but I follow Dan. But I haven't been able to – I've been on the fence the whole time, probably still getting over Geelong getting beat the way they did. But this is the moment where I've got to pick, so I'm picking the Bulldogs.
Bradley?
I'm like you guys where I can't decide being Monday, and I won't be any different come Friday, Saturday. No. But I'm going to go Melbourne, and only for one reason. I said at the outset it's going to be one in the midfield. Last week, Melbourne, their top liners through the midfield in Oliver, Viney and Petraka had 24 centre clearances, where the other three, Liberatore, Bontempelli and McRae, had 15. If you're going to get nine more, roughly around that 9-10 more clearances, and when the Bulldogs do win these clearances, they're going down the throat of guys like Lever and May, where these guys had 19 intercept marks last week. They're back six. I just think that's the only reason. But you know what? I've got a real soft spot for the Bulldogs, and I know everyone's saying Melbourne, you should have it for them because they haven't won one since 64. I've always had a soft spot for the Bulldogs. They've only won one in 66 years. My heart is going for the Bulldogs, but the logic in my head, which is not much, there's a lot of space in there, yeah. I'm going to sit on Melbourne.
Yeah, I think it's just been the era of breaking the droughts, hasn't it? Like we've had the Cats and the Swans as well, and Geelong, and then the Bulldogs, and just all these droughts. Got even Hawthorn broke a 17-year drought, which for them is a massive drought. It's not for some other clubs, but there's something special about what's happened in the era of the even up, where the clubs aren't as the gap isn't quite as big as it maybe used to be, where you're down the bottom for 20 years. So there's that romantic side that thinks the fairy tale. Barassi's, you know, he's still around. Barass and Neil Danaher's done an amazing job over the last decade as well. And you just think all these guys, it's the timing's just right for these guys to make this happen, you know. So I think they'll be underneath everything. If no matter what, we'll all be sort of thinking, oh, that's awesome, you know, if they get up and win.
Yeah, you're a romantic footy fan, no doubt about it, Dan, and I reckon there could be another book coming in a Melbourne flag.
Unfortunately, someone beat me to the punch. It's come out literally in the last week or two. It's on the 64. It is a good book, actually. But, he's timed that very well because he might just might sneak it in at finals time. But it's going to be fantastic. I don't know, are they doing a parade on Friday?
No. There's another comparison too, you know. Richmond were on the verge of sacking Hardwick.
Yeah.
And Melbourne were pretty close with Goodwin. They were looking to move him on. And right now, obviously they won't be. And I must say, Dan, I forgot to mention, I did see you've interviewed Frankie Davis from the 64 Premiership of Melbourne. He coached me in the Latrobe Valley representative side in 86 when I was playing in that competition. And we went out and we played Geelong in at Cadinia Park in the final of the Division One of the representative sides. Big Shane Lovelace was our full forward. And he got in a massive fight with a guy by the name of Woodman of Geelong, who was a massive man. I'm sitting in the forward pocket. And the runner comes out and Frankie said, the runner says to me, Frankie said, get the F out of there, you idiot. He said, I'm 4 foot three and these blokes are 6 foot five. And they're about 300 kilos between the two of them. And I'm trying to stir a little bit of trouble and the runners come out and drag me out and Frankie said, get out of there, you idiot.
He could kick a goal too, Lovelace. He hit what he was doing in front of the big sticks.
Well, we had to room. Yeah. Frankie had this great idea of if you're playing next to a bloke, you room together. So we're in Geelong, playing in Geelong, and I'm rooming with Lovelace because I'm playing in the forward pocket. He's at full forward. Lovelace is out all night and he rocks up at 3 o'clock in the morning before the game. Ah, are you awake? Because he had that real squeaky voice. Oh, you awake, Brad? I said, yeah, I am now. He'd fallen over the bed and the table in the room. And he went out and kicked five goals and we win the game. I didn't get a kick and I was in bed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, right. Did you get that, boys? Brad was in bed at 9 o'clock.
It was the last time ever in his footy career.
Yeah.
No, it was good having a chat. It was good having a chat to Frank Davis. I think there's 13 or 14 left from that 64 team that are still fitting well. And yeah, Frank's got some great memories. It was his sixth game, the 64 grand final. Not bad. Probably thought he'd come in for a good career here and then didn't get to play in another final at all, I don't think, after that. So, yeah, lots of great stories that have come out of that era. And we've probably all bumped into Brassy somewhere over the years. I've had the luxury of being able to do that. And you just... He's been at other clubs, but he still has the glint of red and blue in his eye, I think, whenever he gets down to the nitty-gritty. I think if anyone wants to see Melbourne win a flag, it's him, isn't it?
Wouldn't you love it to see him win it for him and Neil Danaher?
That's the thing, though, isn't it? And as sentimental as it would be, and I'd agree with you, it doesn't make a player kick it any longer or run any faster or get to the footy first.
Oh, no, I don't mean them as in general, but...
Oh, no, I know what you're
saying. For them to win it, can you imagine?
Yeah.
I mean, I just think for Barassi and Neil Danaher, because it's been 57 years, and Owen and I can attest to this, it's, you know, it's been 55 for the Saints. You don't know when it's coming around, and I would say it's probably not going to come around again for Barassi and Danaher.
No, that's it, yeah. Yeah. And the other one on a different level is Nathan Jones, who's put up with all the crap of the last 20 years and he just misses out. Great he got to be home for his kid's birth, but he just must have been personally just driving to get to that last week. Not wanting an injury in the team at all, but also thinking, where can I slot in? How can I, you know? So that's the hard luck. And he can't even be there to watch it. That's the cruel thing, isn't it?
Just so selfless. And you just wish he could be there. Sometimes I look at it and go, why don't they just play him?
If
they're going to be that much better than everybody else, they could carry one. He'd be in their bottom six. I don't know. Why don't they just play him?
Oh, boys, we better wrap it up. We could talk all week, but, you know, it'd be good to do this again at some stage. I've enjoyed chatting with you all. All right, enjoy your grand final day, everyone. And, as we said, we hope we've brought a bit of levity to the week. It's been a long week, but good luck for whoever team you support. And thank you for listening to Any Given Monday with four of the least educated blokes you've ever heard.
Any Given Monday.